RNZ National, New Zealand will be sending 30 Defence Force personnel to Britain to train Ukrainian forces in handling a specific weapon, a howitzer. Chief of Defence Force Air Marshal Kevin Short said 230 Ukrainians would be trained by New Zealand troops. And the PM said this new deployment was another way New Zealand could support Ukraine. But is it enough, or is it just a last-minute gesture by the government on the eve of the Prime Minister's visit to the US? Former Defence Minister Ron Mark has just returned from Ukraine, where he was helping with evacuation and aid efforts there, and he's now en route to Indonesia. Kia ora, Ron.
Hello, Karen. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thank you so much for talking to us. I know you're in the middle of catching a flight. Where are you going to this time?
We're going to a United Nations global platform which is going to discuss disaster risk reduction. And it'll be interesting because, so I'm with a Māori scientific network group called Te Tiro Whakamātaki. And, they've been asked to present and I've been asked to accompany them, I think. My climate crisis report still has people talking about it, so I'm told, internationally and around the world. So it's really nice to know that. That work is still seen as pioneering work. It'll be interesting, yeah.
You've done quite a bit of global travel recently. You visited Ukraine. So what is the situation like there?
It's as bad as you would think. In some areas, it's pretty gut-wrenching. You know, it is a war, and it's a war of the type that New Zealand hasn't seen or been engaged in probably since the Second World War. Defensive dug-in positions, trenches, and up until the spring hit, we were there as weather was coming right. But prior to that, it was mud. There were stories of people with trenches, soldiers getting trench foot, and and living in stage, dug down to what the military terms is stage four with full overhead protection. That's back to trench warfare of the type that Europe saw during the First and the Second World War. But it's an artillery duel, pretty much everything everyone's hearing from the international media. That's it on the ground. But the other side of it is that parts where Ukraine has liberated cities, towns, and pushed the Russians away from Kyiv, life is getting back to normal in those metropolitan areas. Well, as normal as it can be when you've got air raid sirens going off, warning you there's potential for an artillery strike or an airstrike. But pushing the Russians back, the Russians withdrawing back and reconcentrating their efforts in the east and the south has taken the pressure off a lot of the towns. And it's astonishing to me as to how swiftly the Ukrainians have moved to start rebuilding bridges that they had to knock out themselves to stem the Russian advance, rebuilding roads that are being bombed and destroyed or partially destroyed, clearing some of the apartment blocks that had been hit with airstrikes and artillery fire to reduce in preparation of actually knocking them down and starting to rebuild. So they're not just fighting a war, they're also clearing and trying to reconstruct and get life back to normal in those areas where they have recaptured and reclaimed the security. And it's astonishing to see that. They're hugely resilient people, I have to say, and determined. The other change that we're seeing is that we went in there with a mission of delivering 80 ton of supplies. We delivered 115 ton, and we were looking at bringing 3,000 people out. We didn't quite get that, partly because the Russians wouldn't release people, let people leave Mariupol. We had 500 people there. We tried to get out, but it didn't happen. And partly because Ukrainians are not necessarily wanting to leave. Well, they're not wanting to leave Ukraine now. But if anything, asking to be relocated into safe areas where they have familia, where they have they know they can get accommodation of sorts, living with people they know. And again, there are those who are coming back. And we crossed the border. There were people coming back across the border who'd been in safe locations such as Romania and other parts of Europe. We actually brought ourselves in our van. We walked across on foot, and we had vans there which we'd hired in Ukraine to put money back into the Ukrainian economy. We're doing a lot there, even buying whatever supplies we could, as opposed to buying them in Poland or other European countries, to put that money into the Ukrainian economy, and particularly into the local economy, where things are functioning normal, well, sort of normal. And we took a woman across with her two children, a young woman. She would have been in her 30s. And she was adamant. She'd had enough. She was in a perfectly safe location. The children in a perfectly safe location. But she just wanted to get back into Ukraine and be close to her husband who was fighting. And she wanted to be there for him when he came back from the front and had was on leave or was back permanently. She just couldn't stand being in Romania anymore. She came back. It was quite emotional. It was just watching her with the children and thinking, you know, this could be any young woman with a stroller, with two kiddies, you know, taking her child, oldest child, off to school in the morning, you know, walking down the street of Carterton, going to Carterton Primary School. This could be any of those young women. And, yeah, it's just, you know, it gets you.
Yeah. Ron, as an ex-defence minister and ex-mayor, in what capacity were you there?
Well, I made it clear to the people, and we had meetings in Kyiv the last day before we came out, and we needed this conversation with some officials and some people to find out what we should be doing for the next run, because we've got to go back. And I made it clear to them that I'm not there. I was not there in any official capacity on behalf of the New Zealand government at all. I could offer them nothing from the New Zealand government. I had no authority, no status at all. I was just an aid worker with GCS delivering humanitarian aid. But of course, you know, I have knowledge and I have a desire to help. So they took it from that. Obviously, they'd done their work on me. They knew who I was. They knew where I'd come from. They'd clearly been speaking to the Ukrainian ambassador designate, who's just been appointed, who has yet to be sworn in, but had yet to present his credentials to the Governor General, but she's away and the timing's bad. But obviously, they'd be talking to him. There's been some interesting political maneuverings, and I was aware weeks ago that this was going to happen, but the New Zealand mission used to be run out of Singapore. Well, not only have there been some changes to the Australian office in terms of the ambassador, also with the Singapore, they've changed, but they've moved the New Zealand mission from Singapore to Australia, to Canberra, and Zelensky's appointed a new ambassador. And I understand that he spoke to New Zealand MPs in Parliament recently, I think on VE Day, through by video connection, and I think he made it pretty clear that Ukraine wanted more from New Zealand.
And this is something that you've advocated for, that we get involved in military training. Why do you think this decision has been made now? Simply because of that conversation?
I think it's a combination of things. Look, I think New Zealand's been under a bit of heat since this government was formed, basically a majority Labor government, and that has given cause for the Five Eyes nations to be sceptical and worried about New Zealand, worried that they're going to step back from commitments to the capability plan, worried that their independent policy, foreign policy, is going to become an isolationist policy, worried that of all the governments they've ever come across, this looks more like a New Zealand first government, in the sense that they only want to do things that suit New Zealand and be independent and assert themselves. That has sent some little shudder waves through the Five Eyes community. There's an impending and it was interesting that AUKUS was formed without New Zealand. There'd been a lot of rumour that they were going to boot New Zealand from Five Eyes. That didn't happen. They simply formed AUKUS. And I think that was designed, that sent a clear message to New Zealand, to this government. And I think that on on the verge of a visit by the Prime Minister to America, all the drums were beating. Word was being sent back to New Zealand, you better come on something. Otherwise, you know, it's not going to be a very pleasant visit. You're not going to be received well. You've got a war in Europe. The result of this war will determine what's going to happen in the free world, and we need to know which side you're on. And I'd say official to official, there's been some pretty blunt talk going on between the United States, Britain and New Zealand and Australia. I think it's been made very clear from a number of directions to this government that you've got to pull your finger out and take this seriously. You can sit down in the bottom of the world next door to the penguins in Antarctica, but you're not isolated. You're part of this world, and you have a responsibility to demonstrate that you care and that you're concerned about our safety, our security. I think Europe sent that message. I think the USA sent that message. I think everybody's sending that message. And by the way, no one's interested in talking about a free trade agreement. We want to know what you're doing for Ukraine. That's it. End of story. And I think this government's been hearing the officials who advise this government, and the government itself has been hearing this message very firmly over the last few months. And it pleases me that they've taken the step. But I've got to say, but wait, there's more. Because I met with some people, our organisation, GCS, met with a whole bunch of community people, former mayors, and I won't go into the names because it's not helpful. We met with some people privately, but then I met with separately with some people from the military and the intelligence service. And they made it pretty clear to me what they need. And their request to me was, please, if you can do anything, just tell people we need these sorts of things. And training is right at the top of the list. And it's not just about artillery. It's about special force training and infantry training at the recruit basic level. They are, as I predicted in that interview on Q&A, they are struggling with trying to train people who have had no military experience whatsoever, never held a rifle in their entire life. They're struggling to give these people sufficient training they can go straight into the front line and be effective and not be killed immediately. And unfortunately, that is happening. Inexperience costs lives. Poor training costs lives. New Zealand government should remember that. That's why I wanted to re-equip the military, because if you deploy people and they don't have training, they don't have equipment, they don't have the experience, and they don't have experienced instructors, they die. And then it makes your problem worse because you've got to find replacements for them. But it's artillery is a major asset in this conflict right now, but so too anti-tank weapons like MLAWs and Javelin, and anti-aircraft weapons like Stinger. They don't have the simulators which allow them to train people without firing ammunition. So everything they train on, they got to fire live ammunition, which is ammunition they'd rather fire at the Russians. But simulators would help them. Special force people who can teach close quarter combat, urban warfare, even how to survive in trenches, just simple basic things that recruits should take 12 weeks to learn. They are turning them around in 2 weeks.
I was going to ask you about the timing. 2 weeks.
2 weeks from being a kid at school, kid at university, putting on a uniform, and you're in the front line. I've got to hand it to them. They are doing a superb job, because quite clearly the Russians have suffered badly. There's things like anti-aircraft weaponry. There's drones. Drones have become the queen of the battlefield. And the ability to link up drones with artillery, link them up with special forces, link them up with other capabilities and other assets. So instructors. That's what they need. And that's what they're getting from other parts of the world. That's what they're getting from private contractors. And they simply cannot get enough. And whether they are training, I won't suggest what they could be doing, but other countries are doing it. And they just need help. And that's it. So it's good to hear. This is a good step forward. It might give some encouragement and enable the Prime Minister to be received a little more warmly in the United States. But there's more. The interesting thing is, Karen, that they're already looking beyond victory. They're already looking at what they're going to need to get their country's economy back on its feet. And there's other areas where I know, and I'm talking to Te Tiro Whakamātaki, because I think the Māori Science Network could play a valuable role. They're talking about how they've studied enough around what happened in Kosovo, what happened in other conflicts like Iraq and Syria, they know that they're going to have to do a hell of a lot to remediate their land from the pollutive effects of war and combat and the weapon systems that have been applied to the ground. They've got to get their land back into a state where they can produce food that will be acceptable and not contaminated, or from ground that's not contaminated. So they're already looking at remediation and already looking at reconstruction.
Some way down the track.
Yeah, but they're having, there are people in the administration looking at that now and trying to think forward. I think probably the good message here for New Zealand is New Zealand needs to think forward too, because Ukraine is such a major player in agribusiness internationally, a major agricultural producer. They are now a member of the EU. They will have a massive say. I think they will have a massive say in any future decisions around whether or not people get free trade agreements with the EU. And, of course, New Zealand has always desired such a thing. New Zealand's really going to have to step up to the plate if it even wants to get heard post this war.
Ron, the Prime Minister has said you being on the ground in Ukraine wouldn't add anything. You say she's going to get a hard time in the US unless these 30 troops went. What's your response? Well, these defence personnel, should I say, went. What's your response?
What did the Prime Minister say?
Yes, that you being on the ground wouldn't add anything.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Prime Minister gets advice from the people she surrounds herself with, and I wouldn't listen too much to some people. The thing I learned a long, long time ago from people who learned that a long time ago is that you can have all the bright-eyed, pencil-pushing, advisors you like around you, but the only thing that really matters is the feedback you get from directly being on the ground. And I don't know anyone in her office who's been on the ground. I don't know anyone in MFAT that's been on the ground. And we keep reappointing the same people who advise the next government, the next government, and the next government. Sometimes you've got to clean the deck. And the one thing that I did when I became Minister of Defence, I cleaned the deck. I changed the Chief of Defence Force. I changed the Chief of Army, Chief of Navy, Chief of Air. Changed the Chief of Joint Force Command. And we've got new people in with fresh ideas and people who were amenable to doing things differently. And it wasn't to say that everyone who'd gone, who we moved on, was bad. It was just time for a refresh, a rethink, and new ideas and a new way of looking things. Now, getting your backside out of an office and going to Ukraine and talking to the politicians there who are fighting a war is one good way of getting real intelligence, real information, and feeling it and seeing it. And, when I walk through the buildings and the rubble of people's destroyed homes, and I'm stepping around unexploded munitions, and I'm handing out food parcels to families and the young woman with their children hanging on to their mum's skirt and trousers, I get a real strong sense of what's on the ground. And when I talk to people in their administration who tell me straight to my face, Mr. Mark, this is what we need, I get a real sense of what they need. So, Prime Minister, you have many of you. I've offered my help to this government many, many times and been rejected. People don't even pick up their phone and answer my texts. And yet everything I say seems to come to pass. I can't give the Prime Minister advice if you don't want to listen.
And that's Ron Mark, former Defence Minister.